Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, pulling your eyelids open. This is the awesome show on the podcast. It's called Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm the host, Russell Price. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing on our newsmaker line. The wonderful Macy Dunbar. She is awesome with what she does. She has decades of being an entrepreneur, a dynamic in the dynamic beauty industry. She also is a celebrity beauty expert for the celebrities in the world. Macy, welcome aboard. Tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here this morning. I'm grateful to have gotten up this morning. I look in the mirror. I know who I am. I can talk. I can move. So I'm grateful to be here. Thank you so much for having me. As Russell stated, my name is Macy Dunbar. I'm originally from Liberia, West Africa, so I'm a Liberian American. I am a beauty expert, a beauty change agent, a beauty advocate. I've been in the professional beauty industry for 29 years. I can't even believe I'm saying that because I never thought I would be in the industry this long. I've been in the beauty industry for 29 years. I am the president and founder of the global award-winning Macy Dunbar Beauty Brands featuring Bluffajo Cosmetics. Bluffajo is my cosmetic brand. I am a TED Talk speaker. I've been a TED Talk speaker. I'm also a United Nations Goodwill Ambassador, a celebrity manicurist, makeup artist, and a beauty change agent and a global citizen for beauty. That's it in a nutshell who I am. Everything else you want to know, just go to MacyDunbar.com.
MacyDunbar.com. But I tell you, Macy, that's a mouthful. You were born in Africa?
Yes, I was born in Liberia. I was raised in Liberia as well as raised in Michigan. So I came into the States when I was really young. Not really young, but I was younger. But the foundation of who I am was in Liberia, yes.
How did you have the vision to go into the beauty industry and to make it not only go into the industry, but to make it as powerful as it is for you?
Well, to be honest with you, Russell, I kind of landed into the beauty industry by way of being laid off. I was laid off my job. My degree is in computer information systems. I was working for British Telecom. And I don't know if you remember when, you know, MCI, all those people were buying out companies and laying off people. And but MCI bought us out. And during that transition, I got laid off. And I was always, my nails were always done nicely. I was always fascinated by fashion and beauty. So one of my coworkers actually found a nail school in Rockville. And she brought the information. That's how I got started, and I started there. 6 months later, I got a job with, 6 months later, I went into it full time, but I got a job with FDA. I was working at FDA in Rockville, and I was doing nails part-time, and I remembered my dad saying to me that if you do things part-time, you get part-time results. And I really loved it, and I was like, I want to do this full-time. And I just got out there, didn't have a clientele, left my job as a single mom, and I just worked really hard to build my clientele. I started off by, like, pulling people off a bus stop and giving tons and tons of free manicures. And people just thought I was really busy and I was really good, but I was just practicing. So I figured I'll practice on people, then versus practicing on a mannequin.
Now, that is interesting how you gave out free manicures. I remember when the manicure business was done by black women. I mean, it was part of their beauty that they got in the beauty salon, but it was done by a black technician, a nail technician it was called. How did that transcribe where now nails are not done by black women? How did that come about?
Well, this is my theory, actually. I think when I came into the industry, there were a few African-American nail techs or nail techs that were of African descent, people of color. And one, we as people of color oftentimes, we say we want to be, we get united when there's a tragedy or when there's a crisis. But when there isn't, we are not very united. So when I say that, I reached out to about three top black techs when I first got out of school. I came from corporate, so all I wanted to do was just sit and observe them, and they all told me no. So I got a lot more help from my counterparts, but I think the reason why there aren't as many black nail techs anymore, one, a lot of black nail techs are doing nails out of their homes, or they don't want to get it out there, get in the salon, and, you know, when they get into the salon, if they think they're good, they have a really bad attitude. They don't have that servant mentality. They don't go out, seek education. They come to work looking any kind of way. They're running behind schedule. And today's clients, people just don't have that kind of time. People are not going to wait for you to come. I mean, because I remember back in the day, the kitchen nails, and you get there, you're waiting for like an hour or two just to get a 30-minute manicure. So their scheduling was all, they didn't master their scheduling system. They didn't do any of those things. So because of that, they ended up losing a lot of their clientele to the agents when the agents came in to take over this market. And they took over the market not only with pricing, they took over the market with pricing and getting people in and out and being there. Like you get there at 10 o'clock and you walk in at 9:59 and they're closing at 10, somebody is going to put their bag down and service their client. And I think that's when it changed, that's when it pivoted. So that's what I think happened to the professional manicures, male technicians. That's what happened. I think that's what the switch was.
That's the same. It's critical. You know, it's very critical. Tell us about your seminars, your sold-out seminars, and techniques on business strategies within your beauty industry. How did you come about doing seminars and workshops?
Well, I came about doing those things when I first got into, first of all, when I got into the industry, like I said, I was a novice. I had no idea. So I, too, had to pay for education. And that's another thing a lot of us do not want to invest in. We don't want to go out and pay for education. We want to hook up. We want to this. We want to that. And as an industry professional, you have to find professionals and pay them for their services. So I knew that it was a big industry, and I knew that I wanted to be the best. If not, I wanted to be one of the best. So I sought it out just to do that. At trade shows, I would go to trade shows with bare hands, get my nails done, and the nails that stood out, those were the companies that I gravitated towards. And I became an educator for one of the leading companies in the world, actually, leading nail companies in the world, which is C&D. And I was an educator ambassador for C&D. And for the years that I was there, you know, I was teaching classes at distributor stores, at trade shows. I was a platform artist for them. And all of that, I really liked that because I was teaching people, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed giving them the information. I enjoyed receiving from them as well and seeing them successful. And what I did a lot of times for my classes that I did for C&D, that I taught for C&D, every time after my class, I always follow up with my students to see how they were doing. So when I started doing my own seminars at trade shows, I just implemented the exact same thing because I know that one of the things I do know about myself is that I have a servant mentality. And by being a servant, I'm able to serve people at the levels in which that my area of expertise in lies. And I do it because I love it and I want to see them succeed. So that's how I got into educating. And then I just kind of landed the international platform. And just based on my reputation, I got called to judge the competition in the UK. I was also one of the speakers there. And then I got called to work with a nonprofit in Colombia. Then, you know, I just saw the impact that I was leaving on all these different places in all these different countries, some of which they didn't even speak the language that I spoke, but the universal language is love. So when they spoke love language, and that's the language that they resonated with, and that's how I was really, that's how I've always been able to continue that path, you know, and because I love to see people succeed.
Well, people need education when it comes to their craft, when it comes to them bettering themselves in the business that they're supposed to be in. You can't get enough education. And you're absolutely correct. Most people, or some people, don't want to invest in education. They don't want to take a seminar. They don't want to go to a workshop. They don't want to read a book. They don't want to. I tell people all the time, with the internet the way it is today, information is at your fingertips. You can get anything you want to know from the internet, YouTube, anything. You can get it. You can get it. But someone like yourself who has experience and is going to share it in a seminar, they should be jumping on your seminars. They should be running to you. Tell us a little bit about how you open up your place in Silver Spring. I had the pleasure of coming to a couple of your events that you gave at your event at your location in Silver Spring. But let me tell you what was so impressive about the event. Not only were you a professional, you're place was professional, it was laid out. You pulled in several people or other businesses or other entrepreneurs who was on the same level as you. And you walked through that event and you got a chance to meet other entrepreneurs, and it was just off the chain. Tell us about how you come up with that concept and how you got to know these people to get them together in one location and throw an event of that magnitude.
Well, you know, nowadays, Russell, they call it pop-up. You know, we were doing pop-up before the people had pop-up. You know, now they're extra. There is a name. Yeah, you know, there is a name. They're calling it pop-up now. You know, we didn't even know that it was called pop-up. Now we know. So, yeah. you know, Russell, one of my biggest prayers was I always ask God to use me as a vessel. And because God used me as a vessel, my place in Silver Spring was a place for businesses that were like-minded, for us to get together and get our people to experience what we had to offer. When I opened my first salon, I started small, and there's nothing wrong with starting small for those of your listeners that's thinking about coming into the entrepreneur game and want to have a big this, a big that. There's nothing wrong with small beginnings and growing from there. I started small, and I remember I need to find that paper. I found it the other day. I actually wrote that I wanted to have a place where people of color came to escape. That when they walked into my salon, everything that they were dealing with their job, everything that they were dealing with in life had escaped them for the moment that they were in my salon. And I managed to have done that. So I'm very grateful for that. And with that being said, having that place, it's like having a home and you never invite anyone to it. That energy that you need from other people is not going to, it's just, you know, you're going to need to have a good feel. So when people would say, you know, Macy, I need to move my product, I need to do this, I'm like, come on, let's do something. So it was just a place where I wanted to expose other black businesses so these people can be able to move their products so they can have room for new products that were coming in. So that's why we did it, and it was just a great success. It was a great community, you know, great community.
Well, I want to ring the bell for you because it was not only a great community, it was well done. I mean, I've been to several of theirs. Yours was well done, well organized. Let's switch gears a little bit. How did you attract so many celebrities, such as Patti LaBelle, Zayn, Cameron Diaz? Tell us about how you got in the celebrity contact world of getting these people to take your product or work with you.
How I got into celebrity work, when I first got into the industry, I knew that being behind the chair 7 days a week or 6 days a week every single day was not for me. I knew that I needed to do more. And then from educating and all the other stuff that I've done allowed me to allow me the flexibility to even be better in the salon. So early on in my career, I got introduced to my agent. He is still my agent today. I really don't do things but like that anymore. I kind of pivoted my business, but that's a whole different conversation. So I don't do backstage work, like not to that extent. I try to do like maybe one or two a year, if that, just to be relevant and stay relevant. The staying relevance is important. So my agent is Ken Barboza. I've been with Ken for 28 years. I'm a very loyal person. Ken Agency is like one of the largest running black-owned agency, artist agency. He represents manicurists, makeup artists, hairstylists, wardrobe stylists, prop stylists, photographers. So he represents artisans. And Kent's roster is amazing. So being with that agency and his name, his reputation holds a lot of weight. So that's how I really started. And then from working with, you know, on set with these people, so when they would come to D.C., their PR people or their assistants would call me and be like, Maisie, can you come to so-and-so hotel? We're going to be in town tomorrow. Are we in town now? You know, that kind of thing. Like every year when Chaka Khan came to town, you know, her people would call me because she used to perform for the Navy thing that did. I think it always happens like around September. So that's how just, you know, having that spirit of excellence and being on point with that, you know, just not compromising. Whether I was working on set or whether I was working with my clients in the salon, I was the same Maisie all the way around. So that's why people kept calling my agent to get me back. People kept calling my agent when they were in town. And, you know, and that's just how it happened. And then just based on that, you get in the room with other people to see your work. So they keep you informed. They keep you informed of everything that's going on. Like Priscilla Clark, she's a PR. Her company is a well-known PR company here in D.C. So I work with some people from Priscilla. I've done some people from RCA Records where they brought them to my salon, like 7th Streeter. We had an event for her in my salon. So that's how it all started. It started with my agent, but my agent allowed me to create a book that kind of basically solidified that, okay, this young lady is legit. So then people saw who I was doing, and then they in turn, you know, would call me for other jobs and would call me, you know, to come and do other projects, or they would have people come into my salon and do things like that. So, yeah, and then also a lot of stylists in D.C., also celebrity stylists in D.C., also have blessed me with some of their clients. Like one time I was home and there's a celebrity stylist that does Fantasia's hair when she's in the D.C. area. And somebody referred me to him and he called me, and that's how I was able to do Fantasia's nails. So all of those names and stuff I've gotten blessed by, the common denominator here is me. So first you have to show up and be who you are. and do the best work possible. Because if I wasn't being the best, my agent would have not kept calling me. If I wasn't being the best, I would not have been getting refers from, you know, other celebrities and assistants, other hairstylists, and just other people as well. You know, one of my really good friends, her name is Sharon Page. Sharon is well connected, and Sharon helps me a lot with referring my business to. Sharon could be on a plane and somebody said anything about beauty. She's like, oh, yeah, my sister in Silver Spring. So she has been the epitome of supporting a sister. She always has supported me in so many ways. So anytime she's doing an event, anything she needs, I'm always there for her because she has always supported me. Even when my son graduated from college, she helped me help my son get his first job with the Comptroller of Maryland. So fresh out of college. So for that, I would never, ever forget the kindness and the goodness that so many people have planted in my life, you know.
How important is it to have an agent? You spoke of your agent for 29 years. 29 years ago, you had the vision to get an agent. How many people don't even have that vision to even look up an agent or to want an agent? How important is it to have an agent, someone to actually look for work for you, or is it more better to do it for yourself? Tell us about the importance of having an agent.
Well, for me, I ran a full-time salon, and I worked in my salon, so I wasn't just running my salon. So I had a full-time business. So I wasn't a full-time, what they call, freelancer, consultant, and, you know, depending on how you want to look at it. That was not my thing. I worked full-time. So the agency that I landed up with, how I got that agent, this is just a long story, but I'm going to cut it short. There was a hairstylist in D.C. His name is Bruno. And Bruno referred one of his clients to me one night, and she was in town for something. And, you know, people come to D.C. for different things. And when I think they were doing an Essence story, come to find out she was, at the time, the beauty editor for Essence magazine. And so she called me the next day, I think that Tuesday, and she was like, Mace, I just wanted to tell you that this manicure was like one of the best manicures I've ever had. So then I was like, oh, my God. So then I asked her, you know, she told me that, and then she invited me to New York, and because there was on like a round table. So this is, keep in mind, Russell, this is like 1 year into the industry. So I'm like fresh meat. Although I have been looking in magazines, looking at editorial nails, wanting to do this, I didn't know how I could do this. How am I going to be able to do this? So at the end of the roundtable discussion, I asked her, I said, do you know an agency that represents manicurists? And she said, yeah, I know an agency that represents hairstylists and wardrobe stylists and makeup artists. I'm not sure if he represents manicures. So then I said, can I have his name? She gave me his name. I was already in New York, so I decided before I came back to D.C., let me go see this guy. I went to see him. She called him, actually. She did. She called him. And I went over, and, you know, he met me, and he told me the things that I needed to do. But I can tell you this, though, you have to have thick skin. I mean, today it's a whole different word because when I found my agency, we were taking pictures and he was judging my pictures based on Polaroid, whereas I would have to go to New York, show him the pictures, and he would say no. He turned me down 14 times. 14 times he told me my work was not good enough. So you have to have resiliency. Like nowadays, people want something quick and easy. So if an agency turns them down, you know, they're like, okay, whatever. And now a lot of designers, a lot of people will say, okay, I'll do this for free. So people are willing to do a lot of work for free nowadays just to get their foot in. But for me, having an agent worked for me because, like I said, I had a full-time job. But even though I had a full-time job, I knew what I wanted to do, but I wanted to do the same things that I did inside of my salon to extend my career. So you have to decide what it is you want from that agency and what is it you're willing to provide for that agency. I lived in D.C. I worked in New York for my agent. I worked in L.A. for my agent, but I was never late on set. I think I was late one time. It's only because they changed the studio. It was just a mess. The studio was in Queens, and I was in, you know how New York is. You may have the same street, but you're in the north side, west. I was in the other side of Queens. So I was like maybe 6 minutes late. I would leave D.C. at 3 o'clock in the morning for a 9 o'clock shoot just in case something happened with Amtrak, all of that. So I would, so all of that, again, comes back to you. You know, all of that comes back to you, how committed you are. You can't be late for work. You can't have attitudes on set. And you have to do a great job every single time, you know. And you have to be very consistent. And you can't go on a set where you have to be able to take directions, but you also have to have some ideas as well, because the editor may say, you know, these are the looks that we're going for. You need to have the nail colors there to complement, or have say to the editor, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? People want that. Because you have an agent doesn't necessarily mean you're going to keep getting a job. You have to be that person that has the personality to have to be workable. You know, you can't be going on set with a bad attitude. You're late all the time. You're drinking coffee all the time. You're smoking all the time. You're never around. You're not going to get called.
Well, you do a good job of representing yourself. You do a good job of your excellence in work, and you have a good presence of how you carry yourself. You show well. Talk about your fashion and how you look when you walk into a room. Tell us about the different hairstyles that you have accomplished. Now you have a short cut. All this is a Macy Dunbar look. Tell us about how you establish that Macy Dunbar look.
That's funny. That's hilarious. So the Macy Dunbar look is, this is a look that I can honestly tell you, Russell, I have never, ever in life tried to be like anybody else. Even as a kid, if my mom told me not to do something, I will do it because she said not to do it and not get a whipping. But I just never wanted to be like anybody else. I never wanted to conform to what society thinks looks like. When I had dreadlocks, nobody had dreadlocks. When dreadlocks got popular, and even with my dreads, like, I used to do all kinds of crazy things with my dreads. And I used to dress like a punk rocker back in the day, believe it or not. You know, I would do all these crazy things with my hair and all this stuff. This was way before I even did makeup and nails or whatever. So I've always wanted to have a fashion statement. So anyone that have known me since I was small up until now, knows that what I do for a living is what I'm destined to do. So I don't like looking like everybody else. Like when I went to Nigeria to look for distribution, I was invited to an event, and one of my aunts, she's like an icon in Nigeria. So she goes and she says, because, you know, they wear a lot of wigs and all this stuff in Africa. So she goes and she says, how can you be in the beauty industry and you don't have any hair? And I thought to myself, and I'm thinking to myself, that's the problem with us today, that we feel like people have to have hair to be in the beauty industry. We feel that people have to wear makeup to sell makeup. We feel that people have to be skinny. So I'm just like, I'm going to bust all of that. So I said to her, I'm in the beauty industry. I said, when I walk into that room, I'm going to have a presence. So long story short, the next day, there's a minister that went to her and said to her, where is your niece? She's very beautiful. She was like, who? And she was like, and he was like, the one with the bald head. So I'm like, yes, that's what I'm talking about. You have to stand out in the crowd. So my bald head is part of my glasses is part of my personality. And even with my bald head, all my glasses, all my outfits, I have several pairs of glasses because different outfits project different personalities for me. So when I put on the glasses in a particular outfit, sometimes people be like, is this a new pair of glasses? I'm like, no, you've seen this before. But the outfit and the hair makes it all come together. So that is, for me, as a fashion expert, what I have on jeans, what I have on sweats, I always have to represent beauty, and that's my way of representing beauty. I want people to embody who they are. If you have a bald head, rock it. If you wear a weave, rock it. If you have dreads, rock it. Just rock who you are. If you don't want to wear any makeup and you just want to have glowing skin, rock it.
Well, you truly rock it. I mean, you are what they call a looker, a head turner, a neck breaker, a showstopper.
I like that. I am.
You are that in a bag of chips and some pumpkin seeds with some cherries and whipped cream on top. I mean, if you walk in a room, they're going to say, "Who is that?" And then when you tell them who you are, and when you open your mouth and the words that come out your mouth, she says, not only is she a looker, someone who makes your neck turn around, she can speak well, and then you tell them what you do, and then your credentials. I mean, everything about you is awesome, awesome woman. You are a woman. I call you the four W's. You are a woman.
What is that?
Woman. Well, I'm telling you what that is. I call you the four W's. You are a woman,
yeah.
woman. Everything.
I take that, Russell. I take that. Coming from a man who's been around for a long
Tell us about where you're at today and what you're doing now.
Okay, where I am today, oh, my gosh. So I pivoted my business from the spa. I'm still in the beauty industry. There are two pillars to my business right now, one of which is I have the retail store, which is my e-commerce, and the other is my service. So based on what I've done all these years as a salon owner, what I do now is I train people around the world, help them with spa business strategies to build their spa businesses, not only from the procedures part, but also the technical and skills part as well. I work, in addition to that, I also work with different NGOs, helping them with youth and women development, helping women with like self-esteem through beauty. All of this is through beauty, giving them confidence and showing them how they can be their better you, and also through entrepreneurship. And then the other part is my cosmetic brand. I have an e-commerce store, which is Bluffer Joe, B-L-U, F as in Frank, F as in Frank, A as in Apple, J as in Jackie, O.com, BlufferJoe.com is the website, and it's called Bluffer Joe Cosmetics. Bluffer Joe is a term in Liberia that we refer to a person that is always well-dressed and is always well put together, that possesses confidence. We call them a Bluffer Joe. It's not unique to a woman, but it could be a woman, a man, a child. Anybody is referred to as a Bluffer Joe. So I am basically working full-time rebranding and rebuilding my brand in terms of my cosmetic and building an e-commerce platform. So that's what I'm doing right now, full time. And yeah, and still speaking, still doing virtual classes. I'm doing virtual classes because in addition to the fact that we know there's a lot of information out there, but there's also a lot of bad information. So as a licensed professional, I want to bring great information to people and be able to give them what they need to thrive, to thrive. It's rough out here.
Well, how can they get in touch with you? How can they get in touch with you for these classes? And how can they get in touch with you for your products on your e-commerce store? What's the website, the telephone number, whatever you want to give them, your email address? How can they get in touch with you to take advantage of your seminars and your e-commerce store?
If you're interested in, like, seminars for entrepreneurship, if you're interested for And if you're a nail professional, a beauty professional, a young person needs inspiration, needs a mentor, or whatever, the best way to get in touch with me, my social media platforms, everything is my name. It's Maisie Dunbar on Instagram. It's Maisie Dunbar on Twitter, Maisie Dunbar on LinkedIn, Maisie Dunbar on Facebook. Everything is Maisie Dunbar. I also have my cosmetic brand, which is Fluffa Joe Cosmetics. Believe it or not, people still reach out to me on Maisie Dunbar Spa Lounge on Facebook as well. So that's another way you can reach out to me there as well. Fluffa Joe Cosmetics, as I stated before, is B as in boy, L-U, F as in Frank, F as in Frank, J as in jackpot, O as in orange. BluffaJoe.com is how you can buy my products in our e-commerce store. My office number is area code 301-585-4770. You can email me at MaisieDunbar@gmail.com. That's my personal email. Or you can email my cosmetic brand at assistme@BluffaJoe.com. That's assistme@BluffaJoe.com. And those are the ways that you can find me on the web. You know, just all else fails, just Google Maisie Dunbar to come up, whatever you need.
How hard was it to be an entrepreneur with all of your skills and all of your talents and the way you juggled the business to have it be successful? But on top of all that, you were a mother of a son, raising a man. How hard was that to do along with all the other things you have accomplished?
Oh, my God. It was hard, and you need a village. It was hard because I'm a no-nonsense person, you know, to get where I am. I'm very, very nice, but my no's are my no's, my yes are my yeses. And raising a latchkey kid in America, a black man in America, it wasn't easy. You know, if I told my son something, regardless of whether or not I wanted to, whether it hurt me or not, I had to stick to that no. You know what I mean? I couldn't go back. And then the thing is, like, my son's dad's family and my family are close. In fact, when one of the things I would say to people, like, when my son's dad and I broke up, you know, my heart was broken. But I didn't allow that to affect my relationship with him when it came to his son. I never stopped him from seeing his son, regardless of how I felt. Oftentimes when he did come, I wish he wouldn't have came. I didn't agree with a lot of the things that he did, you know, and a lot of it, I had to set boundaries, but I also had to know that this is his father. I'm a woman. There is no way I can raise he's going to get to an age where I'm not a man. I don't know what men experience. I can't raise a man by myself in that way. So I needed to co-parent with my son's father. So there are times that some decisions my son's father made that I may not have liked, but I went along with it because I didn't want my son to feel like, oh, okay, I can play my mom and my dad. He knew if his dad said something, he couldn't come to me with it because he knew what I was going to say. Because kids know their parents. So juggling that, I give all in all to my family and friends, my village, especially my mom. May her soul rest in peace. I would not be where I am if it wasn't for my mother. Because there are times that I needed to go on set. And if she had to go to work, and I said, Mom, I have to go on set. And she would literally not go to work just to take care of my son so I could work. You know, as a mom, you are constantly sacrificing for your children. It never stopped. I was in my 20s and 30s, and she was still sacrificing for me. And she would come to my house if I was gone for a day or two for work. And she would just never complain once. She never complained once. She never one day said to me, you know, you're gone all day for work. You got me here. Never. She fed him three times a day. She walked him to school because she didn't trust nobody. She was so protective of her children and grandchildren. She would, if he had to take the bus, when he was taking the bus stopped right in front of my house. But she would still walk to that bus stop to make sure he was safe. So it would be so wrong of me to take all the credit. I was able to run my businesses and raise my son because of my mother. It without her, I would not be where I am. Because I don't know how I would have done it. For the hours that I worked and the traveling that I did, I don't know. She made sure she kept him in church. She made sure she kept him in Bible study. She made sure she was at his games. I didn't make a lot of his games. A lot of his games I didn't make it because I had to work. You know? But she made sure she was at every single game. So
you have a great mother, boy. That was a mother. Your mother was something to behold, and I can hear in your voice the love and the admiration and the respect that you had for your mother and you still have today. And to speak of her in that manner and then see the results of her labor with your son today, you got to feel good about yourself. I mean, let's just ring the bell for you because you did it all. And today you're still standing strong as an entrepreneur, a woman of beauty that knows beauty, can handle beauty. Tell us about how you handle what they call relationships in the beauty world. Is it true that other beauticians and other people who have beauty salons and beauty companies, do they rally around each other or do they sort of be jealous of one another or don't want to support each other or try to tear each other down or think somebody's doing something more than they and they don't want to see you succeed? Did you get a lot of that or was that something you didn't experience?
Well, initially, like I told you, I had reached out to a couple of manicurists just to observe because I was trying to learn the industry and they turned me down, but I don't really thrive off of things like that. Even when I worked in the salon where there was 14 hairstylists and I was the only manicurist, can you imagine a 14 hairstylist, only manicurist, a lot of chatter. And to be honest with you, the male stylists, they talk and gossip more than the women, truth be told, and quiet as it's kept, you know. You know, I never really got involved in a whole lot of gossiping when I worked in a salon before I got my own, you know. And when I did get my own, part of my culture, my employees were so busy, they ain't had time to gossip. And I'm pretty sure they talked about me, but the bottom line is I made sure I was fair, and they knew I was fair. So until today, I still have great relationships with a lot of my ex-employees. In fact, one of my ex-employees, she works at Salamander, and she's been trying to help me get my cosmetic brand in Salamander. So, and that says a lot of volume for the kind of employer I was, you know, that she is going to bat for me. And we still talk. We still bounce business ideas off each other. You know, I told her her husband is my brother, you know, and, I mean, she's like a sister to me. And I still have great relationships with all my employees. And all my ex-coworkers, they look out for me. Like I told you, when I got an opportunity to work with Fantasia, it was one of my ex-coworkers that referred me to another hairstylist that referred me to do Fantasia. So you do have that around, but I don't focus on that because I'm so busy focusing on building myself. And I share a lot. And I hold nothing in. And people often tell me, you know, why are you showing people all this? Because I feel like, you know, the more I share, the more I'm growing. Before they can catch up to me, I'll be gone. you know. So I'm not really fearful of, you know, somebody doing what I do or somebody doing better than me. No, because God put us all at different levels for a reason. Nobody can ever be me. Nobody, I mean, look at the beauty, I mean, look at the entertainment world. Look at radio. You in media, look at that. Look at grocery. You go to the grocery store, how many different popcorns can you pick from? You know, I mean, so you have to understand that the way you stand out is by being your best. That's how you stand out. Because when people come on to the shelf, and whether they have money to buy something or a little less quality than yours or yours, when they do have the money, they will come because they know your reputation. They know that your stuff is good. Like, that's just the way it is. Look at coffee. How many coffee shops? You go to 7-Eleven, Starbucks started this whole coffee experience. Now, coffee is more, it's not even drinking coffee anymore. Coffee is a conversation.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct.
You know,
and I like what you said. You said something so profound. You said, by the time they catch up to me, I'll be gone. Because you're going to be ahead of your own curve. You're going to be doing things that you. I like that concept because that's I live by that. I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm also a creative mind of the magnitude. So I create something today, and somebody say, "Well, let me try that," or I'll show somebody how to do that. But by the time they learn that, I've created something else. I mean, I'm always doing something in a matter of moving. So what you say is so true. That you do the best that you can be, best that you are. Your product, make it the best. And once people try it, there's going to be thousands of things just like what you do, but it's not going to be you. You are unique, and that's what makes Macy Dunbar. Macy Dunbar is Macy Dunbar, and no way that they can copy you. Can't be done.
No. No way. And if I spend my time worrying about people copying me or me copying them or whatever, then I'm not going to grow. So I just have to spend my time on how I can develop myself and how I can develop my brain and how I can develop what's my difference. How can I be different, you know? And my difference is my community. You know, I'm about my community. I'm not trying to just sell makeup. I'm trying to change lives. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm going to do, not trying. That's what I'm going to do, and that's what I am doing. I'm changing lives. It's not just about putting makeup on somebody's face. It's deeper than that.
That's a good point. Changing lives. Changing lives, making a difference, and being relevant, and also being who you are. So I appreciate your whole outlook on what you're doing. And this interview, this podcast is going to go and change someone's life. The beauty business has changed dramatically from where it used to be. There was a time when there was a beauty salon ran by a beauty person who was the manager of the salon and the owner of the salon. You had people who worked in the salon. Then the salon became what they call booth renters, where everyone had to do their own little thing in the salon. And then it got to be like Salon Plaza. It just changed up to something that it's not what it used to be as far as the beauty industry and a beauty salon. Where do you see the beauty business and the industry going in the future?
Now they're talking about robots. So,
the do hair or the do nail robots?
There are robots out now, no manicures. So that's where the future is. Robots going to be doing your nails. I see the beauty industry going in a direction where it's going to be so many more entrepreneurs. I see the beauty industry is going to be a lot more educational type platforms for salons. Salons are not just going to be just a regular salon anymore. Salons are going to position themselves to be able to offer more to their clients by educating their clients. It's going to be very heavy with digital, a lot of digital platforms being used, like, you know, monitors, TV. It's going to be very high tech. I see that. I totally see that that's the way of the future. Like, if you walk in a salon, it's going to be a totally different experience. And for those who can catch up, will, and those who can't, just won't.
You remember when you had to go to a hairstylist to get a perm. You had to be a licensed beautician, and you had to go to the salon, and the only person could put a perm in your hair was a licensed beautician, because she went to school, she knew how long to keep it in, et cetera, et cetera. And then along came the box kit. People started using the box kit, and that was something that no hairstylist thought would ever happen. You remember that type of trend that came about? And people, I'll do it myself. I'll go home and do that myself, you know. So even the nail business, they had the press-ons. I mean, all this stuff came about where people want to cut curves. Do you think that's going to be in the future? People still want to cut curves?
I think people are going to always, you're always going to have that. But I also think that because of, like you said, the YouTubes and all this that's out here, people have access to a lot of information. So I think what is going to be unique and stand out for some of the salons out here is really position themselves to be the people that are giving their clients that information. They want to be that go-to person that their clients come to, because guess what? If their clients are high-end clients, their clients' friends are high-end, so the clients' friends are going to want that same information. Yeah, box relaxers came out, yearly press on nails came out, but people still went to the salon to get that salon experience. So they're going to have to make themselves unique to the point where you want your clients to still come to you to get that salon experience.
And you made a statement that if a woman really likes her person who's doing her beauty work, she's going to be loyal to that person. I was watching Wendy Williams one day, and she had some person in the audience stood up and said, "Hey, I have a wig company that I launched, and I like my wig." She says, "Wendy, I want to send you a wig so you can use it and see how good my wig is." She said, "No, I don't want to be involved." She says, "I have a person who does my wigs. And the reason I don't want to take your wig is if I don't like it, I got to tell you I don't like it." She says, "So I'm going to stick with my wig person that I know. I've been with her for 6 years, and she does my wigs, so nobody else is going to do it." So she had the opportunity to go get a new wig person, but she said no, because she wanted the person that she was with, that who she was loyal to. So people are going to do loyalty. They're going to stick with who they know and what they know, especially if what you have is good.
And I respect Wendy for that as well, because she's in a position to take from wherever. She could have just taken that girl's wig and not do nothing with it or whatever, but she knows that she has someone, and I respect that loyalty. And, you know, that's a lot of respect. I respect her for not, because she knows that wig costs that young lady money to make. So she knew she's not going to wear it, or she's not going to credit the girl. But still, the fact that girl stood on Wendy Williams, that was free advertisement right there for her. So as far as that girl is concerned, she probably was like, that's good. That's all. You know what I mean? So, but I respect Wendy for doing that, too.
I got to mention, yeah. So,
we're coming
to the end of our time here, but I want to thank you for doing this podcast. And what is your closing statement?
My closing statement is, first, I want to thank you for having me on your podcast. And second, I would just like to say, be true to who you are. Put God first in all you do. Surround yourself by people that will hold you up. When you cannot hold yourself up, you have people to hold you up. Develop the spirit of excellence and develop a giving spirit and be a servant. If you are a servant, you will be served. That's my closing statement.
Excellent. Well said. Well done. I wish you lots of success. With no doubt, the future is bright for you. The name is branded. Macy Dunbar, yes. That name is branded. When you mention that name, says it all. Macy Dunbar. I mean, what does Macy stand for? How'd you get the name Macy? What does Macy stand for?
Well, Macy is, I think Macy's like quiet, fresh, but I got the name, my mom named me after my godmother, who is Jamaican, who was Jamaican, and they were living in Liberia, and her and her husband were really good friends of my dad and my mom, so my mom named me after her. That's where I got the name from.
A lovely name, lovely name. Again, my name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. Celebrating 45 years of publishing. Don't miss Pulling Your Eyelids Open every day from 10 to 11. See you at the top.
Because the bottom is not an option.
The bottom is not an option. That's right.
All right, bye-bye. Bye, Russell.